El programa fueron las presentaciones a las que me tenía que enfrentar prácticamente cada semana. Otra de las cosas que más me gustó del máster fueron los dos Found Town a los que asistí, porque esas experiencias eran siempre inolvidables y es una manera de darle un empujón importante al inglés.
Ya lo has oído, apúntate al máster de inglés profesional, ahora por videoconferencia. La misma calidad e intensidad, pero sin perder tiempo en desplazamientos. Entra en grupobaugan.com e infórmate.
Esta es la hora extra con Richard Vaughan.
Hello again and welcome. Here we are. The first extra hour of the month of March. I'm so excited. I can't wait to start this. I can't wait. I can't wait. The expression, I can't wait. For example, I can't wait to start this show. I can't wait to do this show tonight. I can't wait. Se dice así, con ese ímpetu. Porque es que tengo unas ganas de empezar. Decimos, no puedo esperar. Es que no puedo esperar más. We say, I can't wait. The expression, I can't wait. I can't wait to know the answer. I can't wait to find out what happened. I can't wait. And things like that. So, I can't wait to do this program, but I'm already doing it. So, welcome to the extra hour. Monday, the 1st of March. Yes, March has 23 working days if we include Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of Holy Week. The last 3 days of the month are during Holy Week. Lunes Santo, Martes Santo, or whatever. After Palm Sunday. So, it's going to be a long month, but it's going to be a good month. The weather is going to get nicer. Probably we'll have a few days of inclement weather. Tiempo inclemente, se dice. Do you say that in Spanish? Inclement weather? I think you say the same thing, right? Yes. Inclement weather. In Espanol. Probably say the same thing. Inclemencias del tiempo. Alright. Very good. Inclement weather. Yes. Tiempo inclemente I've never heard. But las inclemencias del tiempo, yes. Un clima inclemente. Inclement. Probably we'll have a few days, but I think the weather is going to get nicer, of course, because on the 21st of March we celebrate the beginning of spring. It's springtime, younger than springtime, are you? Softer than starlight, are you? Okay. So, what shall we do today on the first day of March on the extra hour? I already gave my previous Richard Vaughan Live this morning, so I'm in a good mood. So, ask me some interesting questions. Yeah. Okay, Richard. Does the King of Spain need to cut down on his calorie intake? Could you speak more slowly, please? Yes. Does the King of Spain need to cut down on his calorie intake? No. He doesn't. He's not fat. He's not overweight. He's not obese. I think he's slim. I haven't paid attention. I don't look at his gut. So I don't know if he has a beer gut. I don't think so. Yes. I mean, he's tall. He's 1.99 meters or 2 meters. He's 6'6" tall. I think it's 1.99. So he's very tall. Very handsome. Very pleasant. I like the king. I'm not a monarchist. But in Spain, I defend the monarchy. But I'm a Republican. I grew up in a republic. But I think the monarchy in Spain is a stabilizing force that's positive. And this king, I think, is a stabilizing force. I don't know. I'd like to meet him someday just to get to know him a little bit. But I don't think I'll have that opportunity. Who knows? So, but the question is, does this King of Spain need to cut down on? This is una forma de reducir. Se reducir su intake, su ingerencia de calorías, o sea, his intake. Intake means consumo, what you take in. Let me see if I can find a good word for intake. We use that a lot in nutrition and dieting, the calorie intake. Intake, intake. Let's see what we can find. Let's see what intake. Ingesta. Okay. La ingesta. He dicho ingerencia, claro. No. Ingesta de calorías. Calorie intake, pero no es rebuscado en inglés, eh? La palabra ingesta sounds a bit technical to me. Intake is less technical. But in any case, la ingesta. To cut down on, it means to reduce. Does the king of Spain need to cut down on his calorie intake? Su ingesta de calorías. No, he doesn't. I don't think so. I really don't think so. I wonder what he likes to eat. I wonder what his favorite food is. Yes, maybe it's chipirones en su tinta. You never know. Maybe it's huevos con morcilla. You never know. Maybe it's, maybe he's a vegetarian. I don't think so. But in any case, I imagine they have a good cook in the Zarzuela Palace. So he eats. I imagine he takes care of his health. I imagine he does exercise. Me imagino que, me imagino que. I imagine he does exercise, etc. So he doesn't need, in my opinion, to cut down on his calorie intake. Although, I haven't really paid attention to his figure in recent photographs. So I really don't know. Maybe he has a beer belly. But I don't think so. The expression beer belly or beer gut, G-U-T, gut, beer gut, beer belly, are the two expressions we use for barriga cervecera. Yes. But I don't think so. Eh? More questions. Come on, ask me some better question than that. All right. Is marriage a sacred institution in Catholicism? Yes. In Catholicism. 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 Catolicismo. Th in medio. Catholicism. Cism. Practice it if you need to use the word. So the question is, if marriage is a sacred institution in Catholicism. Oh, yes. It's very sacred. It's a sacrament. The sacraments are the, what do you call it, baptism, communion, confirmation. I don't know if it's considered a sacrament. Marriage. And extreme unction. I don't know what the sacraments are. I'm not Catholic, so I'm not an expert on these things. What are the Catholic sacraments? Let's see. Baptism, Eucharist, confirmation. No. Okay, Eucharist. ¿Qué es Eucharist? For the first communion, la comunión. I guess that's Eucharist. Baptism, Eucharist, confirmation, reconciliation. Anointing of the sick, marriage, and holy orders. Maybe holy orders are the extreme unction. I don't know the holy orders. Let's look at them. No, it doesn't give me an egg. The seven sacraments. But it doesn't give me. Maybe if I go to the second page, baptism, okay, fine. The Eucharist. The sacrament of the Eucharist is when Christians remember the Last Supper. Okay, well, that's... Okay, yes. So it's not the First Communion. The Eucharist is just taking the bread and the wine. All right, the body of Christ and the blood of Christ. That's the Eucharist. Confirmation is the next. Is one of the three sacraments of initiation. The other two are baptism and the Eucharist. Eucharist. All right. So confirmation is part of the, is one of the sacraments. Reconciliation. The Catholic sacrament of reconciliation, also known as penance, has three elements. Conversion, confession, and celebration. Okay. Okay. And then we have, of course, anointing of the sick. How do you say that in Spanish? To anoint. To anoint. That's untar, untir. I don't remember. I don't know how to... Ungir? I can't remember how to say it in Spanish. Anoint. Ungir, eso es. Okay, now anointment. Anoint as a verb, excuse me, as a noun. Anointment. Unción. Okay, la unción. No extrema. Unción. Which would be the last anointment, I guess. Anointment of the sick is the Christian's, is the Catholic's final sacrament. Okay, extreme. It is given to people who are in danger of becoming more sick from a serious illness. And it is also given to those who are likely to die soon. All right. This sacrament is given by a priest. It is often given to a person in hospital, but it may also be given in a person's home. Well, I imagine that if you're not a priest, you could bless water, converting it to holy water, and do it yourself. I don't know. In the Catholic tradition. So, and is that it? Or is there one more? Let's see. Marriage, of course, and holy orders. Through the sacrament of holy orders or ordination, a man vows to lead other Catholics by bringing them the sacraments. Okay, fine, those are the sacraments. But the question was, is marriage a sacred institution in Catholicism? Well, it's a sacrament. Of course, it's very sacred, totally. There is a problem. And in Spain, is marriage a sacred institution? Well, yes and no. For some people, it is a sacred. For many people, it is. And for other people, it's not. In 1974, 7.4 people per every 1,000 got married. For every 1,000 people in 1974, 7.4 people got married. O 7.4 matrimonios. Sería 14.8. I don't know if it's people. The statistic I have in front of me, the information I have in front of me I think it's marriages. 7.4 marriages per 1,000 people in 1974. In 2016, 4 years ago, it was 3.7. marriages per 1,000, and the population is greater. In absolute terms, the number of marriages has fallen 50%, according to the figures I have in front of me. 50%, half the people get married today than 50 years ago, or 47 years ago. And it's even more if we take into consideration the percentage of the total population. In 1974, the population of Spain was around 40 million or 41 million. Now it's 46 or 47 million. So the institution of marriage is not as popular as it used to be. But that's not only in Spain. I think that's a worldwide phenomenon, more in some countries than in others, but it's a trend all over the world on marriages. Now, I don't know. For example, in sub-Saharan Africa, every woman has approximately 6 babies. So there's a population explosion in sub-Saharan Africa. But I don't know if it's also in marriages. I have my doubts. I haven't looked into that. Now, religious weddings. In 1974, there were 260,000 religious weddings in 1974. All weddings were religious at that time. I think it was prohibited to get married only through the civil courts, what you call por lo civil. They say here, through a civil marriage. not a religious marriage. I think it was under Franco, it was forbidden. It was prohibited. So so every marriage had to go through the church in 1974. And now, 50,000 marriages in 2015, 5 years ago, 50,000 marriages went through the church, the Catholic Church. So the number of marriages in Spain that go through the church, the Catholic Church, has fallen 81%. So that's the Catholic Church needs to do a little bit of introspection, maybe, or try to find ways to bring people back. I'm not Catholic, and I'm not really religious, but I have respect for Christianity, etc., and for religion in general. Well, respect. I think it's a very, very interesting phenomenon. And I prefer that religion continue and not cease to exist, because it provides a fallback position. Traditionally, throughout history, fíjate, city, throughout, a lo largo de toda la historia, throughout history, religion, together with family and tribe, have been the bedrock of security, the only bastions of security for the bulk of the world population. El grueso de la población mundial. The bulk, throughout history, going back 5,000, 6,000 years, and even up to very recent, up to today, family, tribe, lo que llamo tribu, familia, tribu, religion, have sustained people and given them identity and security more than anything else. So I am personally not, from a philosophical point of view, I'm not quick to criticize religion because of the role it has played. Of course, people can attack religion for other reasons. They say that many wars have taken place because of religion, and it's true. Many wars have taken place because of religion, and religion has been used, as Vladimir Ilyich Lenin says, as the opium of the people. And there are arguments that are strong in favor of that position. But if you look at history from the beginning up to now, religion has provided what you call consolation, consuelo, consolación, you say, and amparo, you say, and protection, or at least the feeling of security, rightfully or wrongfully. But that's over the millennia, a través de los milenios, throughout the millennia. That family, tribe, and but family and tribe, of course, especially tribe, creates other problems, ethnic hatred and things like that between ethnic groups, between tribes. They're killing each other. So I don't know, human nature, interesting, una naturaleza interesante la humana, human nature. Okay, but yes, the marriage of the institution of marriage. Marriage is a sacred institution in Catholicism. All right. Next question. Oh, my. Has there ever been a major earthquake in Sicily? Huh, my God. Are you kidding? In Sicily, there have been probably 1,000 major earthquakes over the past 3,000 years. Sicily and important parts of Italy are located right on the fault lines, líneas de falla, geológica, and so they have plate tectonics, those placas tectónicas right there, and so they have a lot of earthquakes. In fact, I know one town. I think the name of it is Noto, N-O-T-O, in Sicily. Noto, Sicilia. Yes. El municipio de Noto. It was, if I remember right, it was totally destroyed in the 17th century. Noto. Totally destroyed. And they decided, instead of rebuilding the town, they moved the town about 7 kilometers away. And it's interesting because if you visit all of the towns in Sicily, you see medieval architecture or Renaissance architecture. But you go to Noto and you see Baroque architecture because the earthquake took place in the Baroque period of architecture. So when they moved Noto 7 or 8 kilometers away, they rebuilt the city based on the newer architectural styles. It's a Baroque, Barocco. It's a Baroque city. It's very interesting. Very, very pretty. Very interesting. But I think it's Noto. Okay, Noto. Let's see. All right, let me find it. En los siglos siguientes, la ciudad se expandió ampliando sus límites medievales. Y nuevos edificios, iglesias y conventos fueron construidos. Estos, sin embargo, quedaron totalmente destruidos por el terremoto del 11 de enero de 1693. 1693. La devastación de la ciudad fue acompañada por su economía, que descansaba en productos agrícolas como el vino, aceite, etc. La ciudad actual, reconstruida. Doesn't say how far it is. It doesn't say how far it is. I think it's about 7 or 8 kilometers away. And I spent maybe about 5 hours in Noto. And I'll never forget it. It's just very, very interesting. And I remember another thing about Noto. I saw a carabinieri walking down one of the streets in Noto. De la forma más chula que he visto nunca en un policía. En este caso, un carabinieri italiano. I don't know how to say chulo in English. In this case, chulo. De la forma su andar, sus andares and everything. I don't know how to say it. Cocky, bold. Cocky is perhaps the best way. Cocky means gallito. Eh? It comes from the word cock. And cock means gallo in British English. Cock also means the male sex organ. And so in American English, they don't use it. They say rooster. Rooster. But not cock. But cocky, yes. In the States, we say cocky. Engreído, arrogante, petulante. Bah, gallito. Eh? Altanero. Yeah. I remember, see, watching him. I mean, he was tall, slim. He was good looking, with a mustache. And he was wearing the carabinieri uniform. And he had a gun, and he was walking down the street like he was the owner of the city of Noto. The population of Noto, it's pretty big. It's not just a small town. Maybe 40,000 people? I really don't know. Let's see, Noto in Sicilia. Noto, population, 24,000. All right, a little bit smaller than I thought. 24,000. It's in the south of Sicily. Very, not too far from Syracuse, Syracusa. Syracuse was a Greek, very, very important Greek city-state. Almost equally powerful and as Athens. Syracuse. It's very interesting, the island of Sicily. It's really, really interesting. You should spend a couple of weeks there. If you like history, if you don't care about history, forget it. Although you can eat well and drink well. The wine is very good in Sicily. The red wine is excellent. And the food is excellent. If you rent a car, be careful because the people drive totally crazy. They don't pay attention to stop signs or anything. Just be careful. I remember I was driving in Palermo. And the light was green, so I could continue. I was on a street, and the light was green, so I was driving, continuing, and a man decided to cross the street on the zebra crossing, the pedestrian crossing, but he didn't have the right-of-way. I had the right-of-way, but it didn't matter. He just started walking out, but he was carrying a baby, maybe 6 months old, and he was carrying a baby and just walked right out. He was defying me. He said, usted parará, porque yo voy con un bebé. aunque tengas el semáforo en verde y yo no. And he was carrying a baby. I said, my God, this guy puts the baby at risk. Because if I hadn't been looking, if I had been looking at a building, at the architecture of Palermo, if at that moment I hadn't been paying attention, I may have hit him and killed the baby. You never know. But I was paying attention. You have to pay attention in Sicily when you're driving. Otherwise, you're dead. All right? Because you will, well, you're dead or you're... Or you have a court case because you've hit somebody, you've run over a person. It's quite a mess, but I like Sicily nevertheless. A lot of history there. All right, I'm coming up to the end of my first half hour. So, I'm not going to pursue any more questions. Major earthquakes in Sicily? There have been many. I'll be right back.
¿Quieres aprovechar el tiempo en esta nueva normalidad y resolver tu viejo problema con el inglés? Apúntate al Máster en Inglés Profesional, ahora en modalidad de videoconferencia. Los mismos profesores, la misma calidad, la misma intensidad, pero ahora desde tu casa. Infórmate en grupobaugan.com. Máster en Inglés Profesional de Vaughan.
Urban Camps, aventuras e inglés. Este verano no dejes que se te escapen.
Nuestro curso de inglés por videoconferencia es la opción perfecta para perfeccionar tu inglés en poco tiempo y sin perder tiempo en incómodos desplazamientos. 100% online, por videoconferencia, desde cualquier lugar. Grupos de 6 personas como máximo. Horario de mañana o tarde. Prueba de nivel gratuita. ¿Qué más quieres? Nosotros no podemos darte más facilidades. Ahora te toca a ti. Entra en grupobaugan.com e infórmate sobre nuestro curso de inglés por videoconferencia.
Avon English Class is not the same as other English classes. In Avon English Class, time is optimized to the max. Every minute counts for your company. Every minute counts for your English. It's all a question of mathematics. The more you practice key structures of the language in every class, the more confident you will be when you use them in real life. And the more effective you will be as a communicator in English. And in this global world of ours, communicating effectively is absolutely key to success. By means of face-to-face classes or video conference classes, Vaughan will make all the difference for your English. And you will make all the difference for your company.
Más información en Barcelona en el 933398687. En Madrid en el 911335831.
You're listening to Vaughan Radio. Estás escuchando Vaughan Radio. You're listening. Lo que escuchas, Vaughan Radio.
Don Quijote y Sancho Panza. Cleopatra y Marco Antonio. Adán y Eva. Romeo y Julieta. Vaughan y Disney. ¿Eh?
Sí, ya lo has oído. Vaughan y Disney siguen colaborando para que tus hijos aprendan inglés mientras se divierten. La magia de Disney con la calidad de Vaughan. Entra en grupobaughan.com e infórmate.
Hey, have you heard about our trimestrales? No? Well, let me tell you all about them. The program lasts 3 months. Eso es, dura 3 meses. Many different timetables to choose from. From Monday to Friday, Saturdays in the morning. And you'll have plenty of homework. And your teacher will correct your homework and check it to make sure you're making progress. Find out more now. Our trimestrales at Vaughan. Small groups, only 4 to 6 students per class, and the class is focused on speaking and using the language. Contact us and find out about trimestrales with one of our dynamic Vaughan teachers. You won't regret it. No te arrepentirás. More information at grupovaughan.com.
Si Si lo que quieres es resolver en inglés y no solo dar clases año tras año, llama a Vaughan. Somos los únicos que te diremos la verdad, te marcaremos el camino.
Prueba el método Vaughan con nuestro curso trimestral. Elige entre nuestra modalidad presencial o por videoconferencia. Y el resto, déjanoslo a nosotros. 3 meses de listening y speaking con los mejores profesores del mercado. Entra en grupovaughan.com e infórmate. Curso trimestral de Vaughan.
Con Richard Vaughan.
Hello and welcome again. All right, here we are back together for our second half hour of today's first extra hour in the month of March. Welcome. If you're joining me now, welcome. In the past half hour, I talked about the King of Spain and his, and the fact that he's not fat. I talked about marriage as an institution within the Catholic Church. Also, some statistics about marriage in Spain. And finally, about Sicily, if there had been many earthquakes. I said major earthquakes. Major. Escrito major. Major means principales. Las principales capitales de Europa son. The major capitals in Europe are London, Paris, Rome, Berlin, Madrid, etc. Vienna, Amsterdam. These are the main. Well, Amsterdam is the capital, eh? The capital of the Netherlands is Amsterdam. And if people tell you it's not, they're wrong. The capital of the Netherlands is Amsterdam. The seat of government is in The Hague. The Hague is La Haya. There's a difference between la capitalidad y sede de gobierno. The seat of the government is in the Hague, but Amsterdam is officially the capital of the Netherlands. Holland, as many people say. All right. More questions. Did you bring any more questions? Yeah, sure. Does the Queen of England possess superpowers? Interesting question. Could you repeat? Yes. Does the Queen of England possess superpowers? You know, I think she does. Yes. She manages the royal house in Great Britain or the United Kingdom. Quite well, and she has always done it quite well. She's had very few ups and downs, altibajos. Now, I think when she's gone, it's going to be more delicate. It's going to be a bit more delicate for the royal house. But the royal house in England has lasted, 1,000 years? I guess we could say from 1066 when William the Conqueror, when the Normans entered, we could start from there. But there were kings before that. So it's a long tradition. And the only time there wasn't a king or queen of England was during the civil wars in the 17th century. Oliver Cromwell and company. After the execution of Charles I, James I was the first Stuart king after the death of Queen Elizabeth I. Estuardos, you say in Spanish, the Stuarts. He was followed by Charles I. Now, Charles I, apparently, I'm not an expert on that period of English history, although it was a very important period for colonization of the future United States. But Charles I apparently was a complicated king, and many of the nobles and others rose up against him, and they executed him. And then for a period, there was a period of about, I don't remember, 10 years maybe, 12 years, in which Oliver Cromwell was the leader, most of the time, I think. Pretty nasty, pretty tough guy. The Irish hate him. And many of the monasteries around England were burned and destroyed. I have visited maybe five or six of them. Very interesting, but they're totally destroyed. But there's something mysterious about them. Maybe ghosts are there at night. But it's interesting, eh? It's really nice to go through England, go through Great Britain and visit these convents and monasteries and friaries. Donde los frailes viven. I say convento de frailes, yes. So it's interesting. Now, the idea that this would stop with the death of Queen Elizabeth II, the current queen, that the monarchy could disappear, I just don't think so. I think the institution is too strong. It's too strong. So, and besides, they have had complicated kings and queens in the past. Well, especially kings. They've had very few queens. The queens of England or Great Britain have been Queen Mary. Mary was the granddaughter of Ferdinand and Isabella and the daughter of Catherine of Aragon. She is called today Bloody Mary. Como la bebida. Well, the drink, vodka and tomato juice, is named after Mary, Queen Mary of England. She was on the throne for about 5 years. And because she was Catholic, well, you will remember that Henry VIII, in order to divorce from Catherine of Aragon, he broke from the Church of the Church of Rome, and he created the Church of England. So he was one of the three predominant Protestant movements of the 16th century. And his son, Edward VI, assumed the throne on the death of his father and continued the, let's call it, the Protestantization of Great Britain. However, Edward VI died very young, at the age of 14 or something, and he only was on the throne for about 5 years as well. His half-sister Mary, daughter of Catherine of Aragon, then became the queen, and she tried to reinstate Catholicism. She tried to bring back the Church of Rome. A punta la espada is what they, she tried to bring it back with the sword, and that's why they called her Bloody Maria la Sanguinaria. Con o sin razón, rightfully or wrongfully, Bloody Mary. So that was the first woman I remember on the English throne or the British throne. The second was her half-sister Elizabeth, who followed her right after. And then there was a Queen Anne for a very short period of time. I can't remember. I confuse them sometimes. And then, of course, Queen Victoria. Wow. From about 1837 to 1901. Long time. Yeah, she was on the throne for a long, long time. Yes. I think it was the reign of Victoria, her reign. I'm guessing, 1837. Queen Victoria. Queen Victoria. Let's see if we can find. Let's see. She was born in 1819. She died in 1901. Now, she was on the throne from June 1837 until her death in January 1901. All right. So she was on the throne for a long time, but I think the current queen has been on the throne longer. Let's see, from 1837 to 1900 is 63 years plus 164. Almost 64. 63 and a half years. Now, Queen Elizabeth became queen in 1952. So up to the end of the century, that's 48 years, plus another 20, that's 69 years now. So she's been on the throne for 69 years. I think Ramses II of Egypt, El Faraon, was on the throne longer than Elizabeth. And also Louis XIV, the French, the Sun King, was on the throne longer than the current Queen of England, but there's an asterisk next to that, because I think the first 7 or 8 years, he was not really exercising his authority as the king because he was too young. His mother was the regent, la regenta, and she was a regent. And so if we don't count the regency, then Elizabeth has been on the throne of England, on the throne of the United Kingdom for a longer time than Louis XIV. And she almost destroyed the royal houses in Europe because she was a carrier of hemophilia. And several of her daughters and granddaughters were carriers of hemophilia. And it affected several different royal houses in Europe, including Russia, of course, the I.E. Rasputin, because of the Tsar. And also Spain. Two of the uncles of Juan Carlos I were hemophiliacs, which means two of the brothers of Don Juan de Borbón. Two of his brothers, older brothers, I believe, were hemophiliacs. One died quite young as a child, and another died, I think, around age 30 or 35. Can't remember. But it was Queen Elizabeth who was carrying the original hemophilia. I don't know who she got it from. I don't know, because women don't manifest hemophilia. It's manifested in men. But women are carriers of hemophilia. It's a very interesting history, the history. But in any case, does the Queen of England possess superpowers? Most definitely. Yes, she's super. She needs a cape. Hay que ponerle una capa. Yes. Ask me some more questions. Oh, Richard, is a hair dryer for drying hair? Well, ask me better questions than that. I mean, is a hair dryer for drying hair? Yes, it is. Un secapelos es para secar el pelo. All right. Fíjate que dice for drying, porque estoy expresando funcionalidad. A hair dryer is for drying hair. Functionality. Ahora voy a explicar como propósito. Utilizo un secador de pelos para secar mi pelo. I use a hair dryer to dry. Pues propósito. ¿Para qué? Para secar. Which is not true. I don't use a hair dryer. Never. Well, never. In a hotel sometimes, because it's so handy, it's on the wall of the bathroom, I might use it. But I don't use hair dryers. I don't have a hair dryer. But I know it's for women, it's extremely important to have a hair dryer. I learned that in 2001 because we had Vaughantown. We started in 2001 in Pueblo de Valdelavilla, Tierras Altas de Soria. And it's a very rustic play, very incredible place, eh? Very rustic. And the women, the female volunteers who were coming from Great Britain, Ireland, the U.S., Canada, their first question, almost all of them, Do the rooms have hair dryers? Okay. So I learned very quickly what the priority is in women when they travel, a hair dryer. Okay. So men don't realize these things. All right. Another question. Well, Richard, should a bald man carry a comb with him? No. A bald man shouldn't. Well, needn't carry a comb. A bald man, un calvo, doesn't need to carry a comb. Comb is un peine. Why? I don't know. You know, I've never carried a comb. I'm not bald. I have hair. But I've never carried a comb with me. My father always did. All his life, He never left the house without a comb in his pocket. And at certain moments during the day, he took his comb out and combed his hair. His generation used grease on their hair. What do you call it? Hair cream. Hair cream. And so that was very popular in my father's generation. If you remember the television series Mad Men, all of them wore hair cream. And so did my father. All right. Shall we continue? Richard, can broken bones be mended? Of course. Yeah. Broken bones, right now, Tiger Woods, his legs are being mended. To mend is remendar, pero también es reparar. Que si los huesos rotos se pueden reparar, of course. Usually, there are certain types of breaks or shatters that perhaps are difficult. But broken bones can be mended. Broken bones can be repaired. Broken bones can be set and then rehabilitated and things. Richard, yeah. Should hunting be banned? No. Hunting shouldn't be banned. I'm not a hunting fan, but I would never ban hunting, except for certain species, if those species were in danger of extinction. Sometimes hunting is opened up. In the south of Florida, they are opening up hunting for for boa constrictors or anacondas. I can't remember. Those snakes are not autochthonous to the Everglades. And so they're opening up. If I were, it's a big problem there. People brought snakes as pets. Snakes is just como los boas. I don't know exactly which snake it is. What snake is causing problems in the Everglades? I'll find out. I can't remember which one it is. Let's see. Pythons, that's it. I knew it wasn't a boa constrictor, and I knew it wasn't an anaconda. Pythons. The growing python problem in the Everglades. Yeah. The Florida Everglades, it's on la zona pantanosa famosa del sur de Florida. The Florida Everglades have been dealing with the growing threat of invasive species like the Burmese pythons, Pitones de Birmania. The pythons are taking over the land and killing so many of the native species. This growing problem is a major concern. Importante preocupación. Major concern for the preservation efforts of these wetlands. If I were the governor of Florida, I would offer maybe $100 for every dead python you bring to a special office. You mean the python? Dead python office. I don't know how many. Let me see if they have an estimate here. They don't. I can find it. How many pythons are there in the Everglades? Let's find out the total number. All right, scientists don't know exactly how many live Everglades. Scientists don't know exactly how many live in the Everglades, but some estimates point to between 100 and 300,000 snakes. That's a lot. So imagine there are 200,000 snakes, 200,000 pythons, and we need to eliminate all of them, because if not, they will continue to multiply. So 200,000 pythons. All right. Let me put a formula on my number here. Okay, now, if the governor of Florida, if I offer $100 per dead python that they bring, about 100,000 Florida teenagers and young adults will go out there trying to kill pythons to make money. But I'm not sure if the Florida budget has enough money. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's only 20 million euro, $20 million. Oh, the Florida state budget can easily pay $20 million. I don't know. If you were living in Florida and you had about, I don't know, 10 of your friends or two or three of your friends, and me as the governor, I say, okay, for any person who brings, for every dead python you bring and leave here, because you can't take it back and bring it a second time, we will give you $100. I think quite a few people would go for it, but I would raise it even more. I would say $500 per python. That's $100 million. That's a lot of money. But the Florida budget, Florida is richer than Spain, I think. I'm not sure. The gross domestic product, Florida GDP. Let me see. $950 billion. $950 billion. Spain, GDP. Spain GDP, $1.4 billion U.S. dollars. $950 billion. There's a mistake here, something. So Spain, I think, is a little bit bigger than Florida in GDP, gross domestic product. But Florida's a very rich state. And so to set aside means poner un lado como reserva de dinero, crear un fondo para un uso específico, to earmark, marcar como oreja, la oreja del dinero, to earmark the money, to set the money aside, $100 million, and every python brought in dead, the person receives, or the group, if they bring, it's a group, they receive $500. So you can imagine, they spend 1 month out in the Everglades and bring back 300 dead pythons. Well, we're moving in the right direction. And those 300 dead pythons, for that group of five friends, what would they earn? How much would they earn if they bring 300 pythons? This time, you see, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a businessman in addition to a teacher. I enjoy these things. You see, they would earn $150,000 in 1 month if they can find and kill 300 pythons. But it's not easy. The Everglades are pretty big. That area is pretty big. The Florida Everglades. Florida, to find out how big Everglades. Escrito Everglades, since it's la zona Ciénaga Pantanosa, the sur de Florida. It's quite big, eh? The Florida Everglades. Let's see. Let's find out. Let's see. 20,000 square kilometers. Okay. That's pretty big, 20,000 square kilometers. I mean, if we look at the square root of 20,000, of course, 20,000 square kilometers. What's the square root of 20,000? 140 kilometers. So the Everglades are 140 by 140 kilometers. So that's a lot of area, and so there are a lot of pythons in that area. Would you do it? Would you go hunting pythons? They're dangerous, by the way, but they are not. The Burmese python, they are not poisonous. Yes, they're not poisonous, but they can kill you by suffocation, of course. They're similar to the boa constrictor or the anaconda. And so then they can eat you as well. So you might want to be a little bit careful and don't, if you're going to go hunting for pythons, pythons will be prepared, because you never know. Yes, the behavior. Pythons are nocturnal rainforest dwellers. Okay. Are they dangerous? I don't know. Yes. Well, I imagine they're dangerous. They'll eat you. If you fall asleep in the Everglades and the python finds you, they'll swallow you whole. But in any case, nice story here. Interesting questions. You asked me questions about these snakes. You know, in Spanish you say la serpiente y la culebra. You know, I don't know the difference. In English we say snake. We have the word serpent, but that's a Latin origin word. Snake is a Germanic origin word. So I don't really know the difference between a serpent. In Spanish, serpiente y culebra. I don't know the difference exactly. But I have to go, eh? Have a good evening and see you tomorrow.
Yo en mi caso me lancé a hacer el máster porque en mi trabajo necesitaba hacer presentaciones en inglés, necesitaba hablar mucho en inglés, incluso por teléfono. Entonces fue la razón principal por la que me lancé a hacerlo, para tener una fluidez alta en el idioma y además hacerlo con seguridad.
Tengo grandes problemas a la hora de hablar. Me puedo comunicar perfectamente, pero no hablo de una manera correcta. Y también cosas muy importantes, como el poder hablar en público sin tener que tener ese miedo o ese vacío a la hora de decir qué hago ahora o qué digo. Con el máster he solucionado ese tipo de problemas, la verdad.
Yo lo que más destacaría del máster sería...